Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I'm going to go ahead and just reuse the intro I did for Locked On NBA for tomorrow. We don't have any more players-only games.
Oh, that's right.
I could cry. I might cry.
Dude, it was such like... The thing that really pissed me off about those is they could be so good.
Yeah.
That players have a unique perspective on the game. Like, my goal is to have a holistic understanding of what basketball is, what the Lakers are, what the NBA is. And players have such a unique perspective. And I felt like they felt, while doing those broadcasts, like players pretending to be broadcasters. Yeah. And the value of that sort of thing would have been players really sharing those experiences. What does it feel like to get hit by a screen? What does it feel like mm-hmm. to battle for a rebounding position? What does it feel like in game 60 of an 82-game season when you're tired and a little bit dinged up? Just all of these things that we couldn't possibly know by simply watching, that they have the experience of, and having a player being able to share that, like, the guy, and now he does this with like play calls and things like that, and that's cool too. But like Tony Romo in football is kind of the standard for what a really awesome.
It like, also feels like a player calling it too. Like when he calls a game, he just like grunts into the microphone sometimes. Like that, I want that.
I want that. I don't want you to pretend to be Mike Breen or Marv Albert or somebody like that. And that's what those broadcasts always felt like. I think the idea could be really cool. They need much better producers to be able to pull it off, though.
Yeah, they somehow got worse last year because they started doing this thing where they had the players only, the people who were calling the game would just sit in Atlanta and call mm-hmm. it from Atlanta and not be in the building. So you're giving these players who are already at a deficit because this isn't what their focus was on for the entirety of their lives.
Right.
You're putting these guys in an even worse spot to have them in Atlanta and do this thing. And also, like, a play-by-play professional really serves a purpose. It makes you focus on the game. And and like what I didn't like about it is that it felt like a podcast. Like I was just, so when I was working at the job I really hated, I told the story the other week about HireRight. When I was working at HireRight, no, that was the last 9 to 5 I had before I really focused on trying to do this, right? Mm-hmm. And I would try to have a podcast playing in the background while I was working on that. And it's impossible to focus for me on both those things at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like with these players only things, where I was trying to focus on the game, but then also kind of trying to focus on the conversation. And I just wound up being annoyed at both.
That's the thing, is that like players only could have been really cool, along with what I said earlier, if they were really into the game too.
Yeah.
There were so many times where it's like 4 or 5 possessions would go by. That's a pet peeve that I have. And part of why I would love to see the Chick Hearn style of broadcasting come back.
Yeah.
Because it was very like describe everything, dribbles up the right hand sideline, kicks it ahead to blah, blah, blah on the wing, right? 17 foot pull up jumper going to his left. I want it like if I want announcers to be, if I close my eyes or if I was listening to this on the radio, would I still be able to get it? Now, I understand why you don't do that entirely on TV, but when it's like 3-4 possessions of just this like extended podcast type conversation going on while like stuff's actually happening on the court, I as a viewer, I'm watching a basketball game, I will listen to a podcast afterward, right? I don't need, you know, to put pineapple on my pizza, so to speak.
How dare you?
They're two good ideas that don't belong together. That's all I'm saying.
Come on.
You like I brought that back right there? Yeah.
All right, well, on that note, I guess we're going to talk. We should host our podcast.
You didn't even see that coming.
I didn't, man. That was just like a just standing there. You know what that feels like? Because I was a point guard, and this used to happen to me like once a week or so, is where you would be up the court offering a little bit of just kind of token pressure, full court up the, you know, 80 whatever feet, not the full 90, because I wasn't nearly as good enough to do that. But you just kind of like running alongside them, bang, there's a screen. Thanks for calling that screen out. I appreciate that. Assholes. All right, today's show, we had, I'm not kidding, the most filled mailbag that I have ever seen. Not just for this show, because for the show it's far and away. But we used to do mailbags for writing, other show. Like I make a point of getting to every single question that you guys send in. I could be very selective, and if they're, if questions overlap, then I kind of condense them into the same question. But I try to get to every single new subject that you guys send in, and we literally could not have done that if we didn't devote, 4 days of it this week?
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do. We have 9 questions here to get us all caught up and get us ready for the weekend when we open up the next mailbag. So let's start here. Let's go. We'll do one question before we throw to break. Willie, Bob, and Johnny, you guys share an iTunes account. Given that AD and LeBron stay healthy, or if they stay healthy, each capable of playing 70 games, who becomes the one player who will determine whether they are merely a top team or a championship caliber team? The obvious option is Kuzma, but what a player like Caruso, Cousins is another option, Avery Bradley, whatever. So who's the guy above everybody else, your X factor heading into the year? Let's leave Cousins out of that because that's the obvious one.
Ah, that's my one.
That's the easy one, just because he's so talented. But right. of the non all-stars on this team, who is the X factor?
So I have a Boogie rant percolating inside of me. I've been deep in the tape, and I just...
You hopped on here ready to talk Boogie. I promise we'll talk Boogie.
Yeah, like when we talk Boogie, I got some things to say. But I will respect your wishes. And it's got to be Kuzma then, right? Like Kuz is good, man. Like Kuz can score. It's... I was a little disappointed by his season last year.
A little?
He was what, an 18, 19 point per game guy. He couldn't shoot worth a crap, but was still a good scorer and still was, decently above league average efficiency as a scorer. He's an off ball scorer, in a way that can fit alongside LeBron James. I thought that he was put in a really, like, what were we doing putting Kuzma at the 5? Why was that a thing?
And at the 2.
Was Luke so determined to go small ball 5. Like, I know Luke Walton didn't like the construction of the roster, specifically with them letting Brooke Lopez and Julius Randle go and replacing them with Michael Beasley, which was never a good idea. but I thought that got Kuz's year off to a rough start, especially on the defensive end. Kuz is, can he get back to his rookie level shooting? This comes up like once a podcast, and it's very important to be able to space the floor, especially with the potential front line of what they could be. I'd really like to see him defending wings. I'd argue that he's a 3. I've really thought that for a long time. He's not physical enough to handle the contact that happens around the basket. Now, we see small ball 4s. We see guys, Harrison Barnes size guys. Kuz is really light on his feet, and that's good on the offensive end. And it could be good on the defensive end if he had better technique. But what that means is that a Taj Gibson comes along, puts a shoulder in the middle of his chest, and now Kuz is lifted off the floor, right? And we see that all the time. And just this nature of his game has always been more of a wing to me than as a 4. Can he contribute as a ball handler? Can he improve defensively? Can he get back to that rookie year shooting? Those are all things that becomes like the Lakers don't have a defined third guy right now. It could be Boogie. It could be Danny Green in a two-way sense. But Kuzma's the guy where like there's more there aside from Boogie's injury. There's more there that can be tapped into. And really the work that he's doing this summer is going to be really determinative of whether or not he fits.
So I agree with everything that you said there. I was a little lower on Kuzma's season last year. I contextualizing it, and we'll do the player preview and we'll talk about all that, on a future show. But I don't know. I might be overly frustrated, maybe too frustrated with Kuzma just because of like the off-court stuff and how focused he is on his brand and being Kobe and understanding what that does for him and his ability to stick around with the organization. So I think, some of this isn't necessarily fair from my perspective, and I'll cop to that. But, you can't be You can't shoot 30% from 3-point range last year and be called a shooter right now. Mm-hmm. You just can't. Like that's not something you can exist as.
No, and, you're right.
Yeah, he needs to. It's not even like a can he get back to his rookie ability? Can he do this? Can he do that? If he doesn't, the Lakers look moronic, right? Because sure. they held on to him above Ingram. According to some people who were involved in the trade talks, they wanted to get rid of Hart more than Kuzma. They want Lonzo was easier to give up for compared to Kuzma, and some of that was contractual, and some of that was some of the intangible stuff that we were talking about or that I talked about a second ago. But if he isn't that, then the Lakers are really in deep shit. But I do want to move off of Kuzma and just really quickly talk about either KCP or Bradley. I think one of those guys, if they play up to what they're capable of being, like if Bradley gets back to Boston Celtics Avery Bradley, that becomes a huge development for the Lakers because he becomes their best perimeter defender at a spot where they really desperately need perimeter point of attack defense.
Yes.
And then, you know, if he's also able to, one of the bad habits that he really picked up over the last couple of years was hesitating on the catch. And not shooting right away on the catch.
He
needs to be a willing catch and shoot player. So if those things happen, then Kuzma not developing becomes easier to swallow. But at that specific position, at the two, kind of sort of, you know, the pseudo one, Avery Bradley getting back to being Avery Bradley from Boston, that would be just a monstrous development for the Lakers.
That's a really good one. And your point about defense is well taken in that at the end of close games, the Lakers are going to have LeBron and Anthony Davis, and that is enough to put points on the board. That is going to be your two-man game. That's basically what every team, you know, boils down to in the last few minutes. That's kind of what you go to, your two best guys, and have them play, especially if they can play off of each other the way that we anticipate that they can. So guys who can get stops, that's my big concern with Kuzma is can you have him on the floor? Like the Lakers could have a lineup out there that can switch this year with Bradley, Danny Green, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and I don't know who that fifth guy would be. They've got some option. Like potentially, but that's the thing, is that if Kuzma, when the Lakers switched the last 2 years, the first two seasons of his career, Kuzma was the, oh, you guys are switching? All right, Kuzma's man, come set a screen for me.
Right, yeah.
Because we're going to go matchup hunting on Kuzma. So his importance on offense is reduced slightly because, and maybe not slightly, because of the presence of Anthony Davis. He's at best the third option offensively. And I would argue that if you're third option or below, you need to be contributing in more areas than just, like Kuzma right now is a good scorer. Beyond that, is there an aspect of his game where he's even NBA average?
Yeah.
Probably not. And that needs to change.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. Let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, we are going to talk about whatever the heck we talk about. I'm still reeling from that pineapple haymaker.
I'd like to pretend like I had that set up all along, but it just popped in my head of like things that don't belong together. I talked about something that doesn't belong together recently, didn't I? Oh, hey, it was on this show.
You were wrong about it, though. It was a thing, and it just completely caught me off guard. All right, this is actually a really fun question. Vujicic fan writes, hey, Anthony, love the show. Thank you. I have a question about the popularity of free agency in other sports, the NHL, the NFL, MLB. I don't really care about what happens in free agency, but I do like to watch the games. In the NBA, however, I find that free agency is absolutely super entertaining. Why do you think that is? Am I biased because it's his favorite sport or their favorite sport? But even the media seems to give way more attention to the free agency of the NBA than any other sport. I'd love to hear your thoughts. I think we have to start with the fact that you have five guys on the court.
Yeah, that's it. The fortunes of your franchise change based on one guy's decision in a way that even if you get a star quarterback in the NFL, he's not on the field half the time because your defense is, right? In baseball, you can sign Mike Trout. He's still only coming up nine times per game and having the couple of balls hit to him in center field, right? Yep. And so just the ability to put the ball in one guy's hands and have him be on the court for 80% of the game plus if necessary, I think that's why there's that. And then NBA does such a better job of marketing its players. Yep. And the nature of the sport beyond just the five guys is, you know, they're not wearing a helmet mm-hmm. of any sort. If you go
they're
to games,
you're pajamas.
Right. If you go to games, you're pretty close to the action. There's no, you know, sitting in the upper deck, really. Mm-hmm. You get that a little bit, but it's definitely not the same. The upper deck at Staples is the 300s is very different than the upper deck at the Coliseum or something yeah. like that. Right. Mm-hmm. So those are the reasons I think why. And I think the NBA does a good job marketing it.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And also, so you talked about, you know, potentially having quarterbacks change teams, right? Aaron Rodgers isn't changing a team anytime soon. Tom Brady has never changed his team. You know, so this year you had Anthony Davis, who was potentially mm-hmm. one of the league's absolute best players. Kawhi Leonard made mm-hmm. a case for himself, was probably the best two-way player in the league last year. Mm-hmm. LeBron James has now changed teams three times, right? And you have the caliber of player, the caliber of recognizable player, and you have all of that kind of going into this. And yeah, I mean, across sports, the transaction has replaced the action in terms of what people are interested in. But in basketball especially, you have this kind of perfect storm where, I mean, just to kind of take people kind of behind the curtain here, one of the frustrations in marketing podcasts, especially NBA podcasts, is that people, the advertisers tend to think that it is while the games are going on, that is the best time to sponsor the show, right?
And don't get me started on this. And the listeners don't want to hear this, but it's just negotiating some advertising deals. It's like, look, you want to be on the off-season videos.
Yeah.
Like, no, season is during this time. Yeah. Like, no, you don't get it. Like, we're all dying as Laker fans to, like, we're envisioning what is this team going to be.
Right. That's
the very nature of, like, the videos that I create, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what do LeBron and AD look like? We'll get the answer to that in a few months. But, like, this is all where we are in terms of our mental space. So whenever there's some content that can kind of approximate that in some sense, like, I want to watch that stuff. So yeah. I want to create that stuff is because yeah. I want to watch it. Right. So yes. Anyway, continue. But yes.
Yeah. July, early July, you know, is just always, you just bank on it. It's going to be a madhouse in terms of interest in the show, interest in the network of shows, interest in all of the shows and all of that. Cause like, that's the stuff that gets people interested in this. Like, you have, and you know, on a macro level, across sports, fantasy sports has played a role in this fascination with personnel movement. Video games and GM modes in those video games has made people think that they can be GMs, and all of that has kind of come together to make it to where people are just more interested in how teams are run than they've really ever been. And I don't think that's a trend that's going to change anytime soon. Wink, wink, you know, right. Advertisers. all right, let's go to the next question here. Edgar Beer writes, this isn't really, it made me chuckle, so I'm just going to read it out loud anyway. Okay. I love the show, like the cream filling in the middle of my maple bar from Granny's Donuts. Oh, it is so moist and creamy. God, that is what I look forward to every day I wake up. That and your podcast, of course. I appreciate that. As a fat guy and somebody who hosts the show, like I appreciate the comment.
I think donut analogies are where our interests may intersect, Anthony, in terms of food and whatnot.
I love donuts so much. Krispy Kreme, it's probably a good thing a lot of the Krispy Kremes went out of business because I would be a whale. Absolute whale.
I'm trying very hard to go in the other direction. I'm at my like lowest weight in about eight or 9 years right now. And, mm-hmm. you know, nearly dying and not eating solid food for 12 days gives you a real good head start on a diet. Uh-huh. So I'm trying to capitalize on that. And I went out with Harrison today, actually, for lunch or for breakfast. And yeah, we just stuffed our faces. So I'm feeling very guilty right now. Nice. I have to get back on the wagon. So yeah, no more donut talk.
All right. Let's do one more question before we throw to break. Assess the Threat writes, hey, Anthony and or Pete, I was thinking this season is probably the first time both of you have covered a Laker team that is likely to make the playoffs. It literally is. Similar to how you're doing player previews right now, will we be getting deep dives into playoff opponents, specific offenses and stuff to come around playoff time? Specifically on Pete's YouTube channel, will Laker film room turn into Lakers opponents film room? I think it would be really cool if you and or Pete could break down a film or offensive sets of our opponents before every series. Could definitely help people understand what's going on around the league. Well, I mean, we've already kind of, you and I have mm-hmm. talked about a series that we're going to get going here fairly soon. We are going to, so right now I have it at about eight legitimate
play or title contenders, right? Okay. Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, Philly, Milwaukee. I already lost track of where I was, but the Warriors are also in there, and the Rockets are the last one. So that puts us at eight teams that I think have legitimate shots at winning a title. One of the series that we're going to do, as well as the player preview series and some other fun stuff that we have planned for the rest of this offseason, is breaking down into just nauseating detail how the Lakers match up against each of those other seven teams. I can't wait to cover a good team. I legitimately cannot wait.
Yeah, I can't wait either. And I've been dreaming. Honestly, I thought I was going to be able to do this last season. But if and when the Lakers make the playoffs, I do plan on going into one of those real deep dives of this is what they run. These are the three games that they played against each other during the season. This is what the keys to those games are. Like, the thing about, I don't know if I can do eight teams, although I can do it like one playoff series at a time, is the way that I like to learn about teams. It's a really deep dive. Like, I've spent the last 10 days hanging out with DeMarcus Cousins footage, right? Mm-hmm. And just watching it, rewatching it, watching new footage, watching interviews, just kind of marinating in all things Boogie, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't do it well without the ability to do that, but that takes time, right? So we will definitely do that preview series soon, and I will get to my work on that. But then as we start getting those opponents coming up, and I'm hoping we have our playoff opponent close to locked in, or a couple of options that are close to being locked in, so that I could really dive deep into that. I really can't wait to do that.
Yeah, it's the idea of covering. So I started doing this about midway through. Like, I really started taking this serious about midway through the Dwight Mayer season, and then from there it's just been low point after low point after low point after low point. So the idea of covering
Anthony, why are you so negative all the time?
No, right?
You may have been raised in that environment as a podcaster. Yes,
I was molded by it.
That's right.
All right, let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we're going to try to knock out the remaining, I think, six or so questions for the rest of this mailbag. All right, Kay Izzle writes, first, great stuff from Pete. Really knows what he's talking about. The other guy can answer this too if he wants. Hi there. I'm the other
guy. We were just talking about this the other day.
I'm the other guy. Should Boogie start with AD, or should he come off the bench with Kuzma so that we have a lot of firepower out there even when AD and Bron are resting? I've been stridently on team bring Boogie off the bench, because so one of the things I actually Jovan Buha and I just talked about this on yesterday's show was how the Clippers really take advantage by having Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell come off the bench and get to go up against opposing bench players, right? And that's something that has really made them a lot more dynamic whenever, regardless of situation and regardless of time of the game. And this is something that I think the Lakers can really take advantage of, where you have Kuzma going up against the other team's, you know, backup wing, and you have Boogie going up against the other team's backup big. That's something that I really think the Lakers should think strongly about, if, especially, you know, this is a big if, but if Boogie is open to such a thing.
I think you can do both. I think that you can at least achieve the same goal for the same reasons. Like, one thing they did in New Orleans when watching that tape is Boogie would come out at the 6-minute mark of the first and third quarters and then would usually start the second. The reason why Boogie off of the bench, or playing with the bench unit, as it were, is a good idea, is Boogie can be the central hub of your offense. And the Lakers have a lot of guys like a Quinn Cook, a KCP, are dependent on shot creators around them. Rondo is a guy, like, if Rondo's in the rotation, then that makes Boogie make less sense. God, the pick and roll defense of the two of those would be just god awful. But But Boogie with like guys who need somebody to create a shot for them actually makes a lot of sense, especially against second units. But I think you can start, like Mike, I mentioned before, I like having Anthony Davis and Boogie getting those starters minutes together, because I do think they fit well together. I think that some of the issues they had in New Orleans were outside of them. And I'm saying this from, again, spending the last 10 days or so in that footage. Now, there are certainly issues there that are real and relevant and exacerbated by the injury. But I do think that all in all, AD and Boogie are a really positive combination together, that the good to best case scenarios, this is one of the most talented front lines of all time. Mm-hmm. And so I want to see if they can bring that out. But I still think that you take Boogie out early, have Kuz sub in, have AD play a little bit of the five, or have JaVale come in for him. My preference would be Kuz, but I think that you can achieve both ends if you just take Boogie out of the game early after starting him.
Yeah, and look, on a night-by-night basis, this is going to change based off of matchup, and then when you get into the playoffs, you have to really hammer home the weaknesses. Like, one of the advantages, something that I thought the Warriors kind of figured out on the fly with Boogie in the playoffs last year, was how if you're going to have Boogie on the court, you really have to have him hammer the glass, right? Because otherwise, if you aren't going out of your way to take advantage of Boogie offensively, defensively, he's such a hindrance that it's gonna wind up being a pretty heavy net negative, right?
Right.
But if you really hammer home and put DeMarcus in the absolute best case scenario whenever he's out there on the court, offensively, some of that defensive mismatch that he creates out there for you, that can be mitigated against it just in terms of net result. So,
yeah.
All right, next question here comes from a whole bunch of emojis. So you know how LeBron posted the video of him playing 2K with all the new additions to the squad and put it on Instagram. I thought it was comical, but it was well in the realm of a need to have in the sense of togetherness because we need chemistry this year. Do you think it actually helps these guys to play with their team on 2K?
I mean, it can help you conceptualize. And it was funny, I was watching the Lakers gaming team mm-hmm. on a Twitch stream against like Detroit.
Boy, we really are in July.
Yeah, we really are. Yeah. And it was interesting watching them. And I was like, I'd love to talk to those guys for just like 10 minutes, just some of the basketball concepts. It's like, hey, you know, they always hedge high, just slip the screen, you'll have a layup. When this happens, then do this mm-hmm. type of stuff. So I do think that there is some of that, but I think it depends on how you, how you go about it. I do know the construction of the playbooks and the kind of the process. And I've known some of the people that construct the playbooks for 2K, and they're like legit basketball people that are making a little cash on the side to, you know, design NBA 2K playbooks in order for accuracy sake and all of that. So I do think there's a way, but I mean, I would probably just play 2K just to have fun, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know how much that, but if he's doing it for research purposes, I could see how that's the case.
I wonder if LeBron ever gets frustrated with, like, his 2K self. Like, no, I swear to God, I make this step back off my left foot. And then the other point that was made here was whether the starting five he played with was the starting five he preferred. That was something that I actually thought was the case. You seem to fight against that a little bit. That is a narrative. I didn't take it as, like, a pejorative. I just think it's something he prefers. Just because, like, you look at the front. What professional basketball player of LeBron James's ilk and of his understanding of the game would not want a front line of DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, and him?
Well, that's the one that has the highest ceiling, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could see how it wouldn't work, but if it does work,
yeah.
Like, how the hell do you guard that? And so, yeah. And all I pushed back on with what you said was just the idea that LeBron's like sending a message to Frank Vogel. I don't think that's necessarily the platform that he would use to, send a message to Vogel. But I do agree that I mean, if that's the starting lineup that he's using, that's probably the one that he wants. Sure.
Yep. All right. We'll do the next question here. Maze 8326 says or writes, keep up the good work. Now that all the kids are gone, how do you think a team of Lonzo, Russell, Ingram, Randall, and Brooke Lopez with Caruso, Hart, Kuzma, and Thomas Bryant coming off the bench would do in the league right now if all were healthy?
Can you repeat that lineup for me? I'm sorry.
So it was Lonzo, Russell, Ingram, Randall, and Brooke Lopez with Caruso, Hart, Kuzma, and Thomas Bryant coming off the bench.
So this is the Lakers keep all of their guys.
Yeah, and never get LeBron.
Never get LeBron, right? So I badly wanted to see a D'Angelo Lonzo backcourt.
Oh my God.
I badly wanted to see that.
I can't lie. Of all the like 2K hypotheticals I played with, that's one of the ones I played with most.
For sure. I don't love the Ingram fit. That's kind of a running theme with me in terms of the lineups and the effectiveness and the skill set that's there, especially alongside Russell. I think you've got your like primary scorer. If somebody needs to stop the ball, then he's a guy who can do it. That said, Ingram can get to the rack. You got Julius and Lopez in there. I really liked that combination in that 1 year that they were together. Mm-hmm. That's a good team. I think that team wins high 30s, low 40s number of games. What about you?
Yeah, I put it in that same range. I don't know how Lonzo, Russell, and Randall fit on the court together, let alone with Ingram also out there.
There's a lot of guys who need the ball right there.
Yeah, sure. Like that was always kind of my concern. Now, you draft best player available, especially at the top end of the draft, right? And you hope that talent-wise, everybody just kind of makes it work. But it's surprising to me that Nance isn't included in all of this either, you know? Like, a fun hypothetical, just to a fun rabbit hole to fall down sometime, is just how would everything look if none of the moves to get LeBron James were ever made? None of them. Mm-hmm. Starting, you know, if you're going to start with Russell, then you may as well not have had them make the Clarkson and Nance trade either, right?
Right.
And you know, if you go down that road, that becomes a more fascinating one. But I think that, you know, I think that group, that core, tops out at like a 6 seed. I don't.
Yeah, right. And maybe that's different in a couple of years, right?
Yeah.
And as they get in, as they're like 27 and 25, as opposed to 23 and 25. I just don't trust
the Lakers to develop these guys.
No, like, and that's fair too. Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. If you drafted all those players and you were like the Spurs, then okay. Then I want to see how that turns out. Because I think they bring Ingram along in a lot of the same way they brought Kawhi along, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, they bring Lonzo along in the same kind of way that they're bringing along DeJounte Murray, you know? And they do a lot of these things that make not just the talent levels work individually, but also collectively in what Pop considers the best way for everybody to mesh. That's where I'd be fascinated to see how that team goes.
I would have been fascinated to see them keep any of them beyond the age of 21.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Right.
I mean, like, I get our player development isn't great, but like, don't draft 19-year-olds. I've said this for years. Don't draft 19-year-olds if you don't plan on keeping them around until they're 25, or if you expect them to contribute right away. Now, I mean, we got Anthony Davis for a lot of them, so it's not like this is the sunk cost. But yeah, I would have just loved to see what those guys could become if they would have built slow and strong. But I'm happy with where the Lakers are.
Yep. All right. I want to end on another one of these fun kind of rapid fire questions. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is from Checo12. One, Kobe not flinching when Matt Barnes tried to throw that ball in his face, or Charles Barkley throwing the ball at Shaq? Which moment was more fun to you?
That's a good one. They're both great because I love both of them. The Kobe one was just such a badass. Like, it was just the most badass thing, right? Barkley and Shaq's fight was legitimately funny because it was these two huge, kind of chubby like guys
Pacific
rolling
Rim.
Around on the ground.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Godzilla and Mothra. Right.
Right.
But just like the way Barkley threw the ball at him, like Barkley was the one guy who was not intimidated at all by Shaq and probably should have been intimidated. But and it just turned into this ridiculous, like rolling around on the ground type of things. I'll pick the Kobe one, but one makes me laugh. One gets me fired up.
I love to laugh. So I'm going with the Chuck and Shaq one. I don't think Chuck gets enough credit for picking up Shaq and body slamming him, because that's what happened in the immediate aftermath.
That's right.
Was you know, Shaq tried to go over there and punk him, and then Barkley just went low, picked up Shaq, and threw him on the ground. That was that was wild. All right, the next one is Godfather 1 or Godfather 2?
Godfather 2.
Same. Al Pastor or Carne Asada?
Carne Asada. You make some of the best carne asada that I've ever had, man. So we're going with asada on that.
I also go with asada, but if you're going to, so if you're getting carne asada, ask if you can get it cooked slightly less than well done, because a lot of places overcook their carne, and mm-hmm. it's a travesty. It's a travesty mm-hmm. and mockery. Minneapolis jerseys or the blue hardwood classic Los Angeles Lakers jerseys? So the Minneapolis ones were the MLPS ones that mm-hmm. they wore mm-hmm. 2 years ago.
That's and like then, the light blue and yellowish uh-huh. or gold, right?
Mm-hmm. Kind of like UCLA colors. Okay, is what they right. reminded me of. And then the classic, the hardwood classic ones are is that jersey that Kobe wore to one of the parades.
Right.
That was like a royal blue to it.
Right. I think I'm going to go the Minneapolis ones.
I loved those hardwood classic ones.
Okay.
They were so effing incredible. They were okay. so great. But you're choosing between Al Pastor and Carne Asada.
Sure. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Bruce Lee or Chuck Norris?
Bruce Lee, of course.
Yeah, that's. Although Chuck Norris jokes are pretty amazing.
Have you seen? Can I share like one thing of pop culture? I'm sure like no one's also seen.
Yeah.
There's this show on Cinemax called Warrior that's based on like Bruce Lee's like some of his writings. And it's like 1870s Chinatown in San Francisco, and it's just like the most badass show I've seen in ages. So sorry, that's free advertising for y'all at Warrior. You guys do good work. Season one was just kick ass.
Yeah, Bruce Lee. The thing about Bruce Lee that I don't think people quite understand was that he wasn't just like Jackie Chan or Jet Li or something like that. There was like a legitimate mystique about him. It wasn't, he wasn't just that he was a badass fighter and all of these things, but you know, there was so much unknown about him because of the era that he was kind of in. It was hard to come by, like Google didn't exist and all of these things. So you just were allowed to fill in the gaps about him however you wanted to. And it got to a point where, you know, those Chuck Norris jokes that people write, like my favorite one is Jesus walks on water, Chuck Norris walks on Jesus, or Chuck Norris doesn't do push-ups, he pushes the earth down, right?
Like those. Very 2006, yes.
I love those things. Yes. It's just like it's like right up my alley for terrible, like terrible dad jokes. But yeah. But anywho, those jokes there, like they kind of exist because with Bruce Lee, you filled in those gaps and you could have told me anything about Bruce Lee and I would have believed it. He was just that effing cool. So yeah, it's Bruce Lee. It's not remotely close. I wish we could have, you know, I wish we could bring back I really love the Jet Li, Jackie Chan, Bruce Lee, just those the movies that those guys make are so effing good. So fascinating. Hero is so great. I just watched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon the other night. That was an incredible movie.
Bro, check out Warrior. If you got Cinemax, check out Warrior. It's like, if you like that type of stuff, this is right up that alley.
Awesome. All right. Well, then that'll do it. I'm still, like I said, reeling from that pineapple. All right, I want to know, you say it's a taste thing, right?
No. I already won the show, Anthony.
You didn't.
I won. I knocked you out in the third round. No do-overs. We can rematch next week.
All right, fair. That'll do it for this episode and this week's episodes of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you very much. We got through the entire mailbag. We did it.
Did it. Thank you guys. Thank you so much for all of those great questions.
And keep them coming. Anything that you guys have questions about, food, pop culture. I love, you know, watching Pete wriggle on the hook when we're talking about Marvel stuff. That's great. So keep all that stuff. And then obviously mix in the Lakers questions. We'll answer those as well. But for now, have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's. And I'll talk to you on Monday.